Clean Simple Eats is a rapidly growing health and wellness company committed to elevating lives through food, fitness, and the best tasting supplements on the planet. The brand takes pride in offering clean, all-natural ingredients with zero artificial flavors and sweeteners. From their TikTok viral protein powders to their delicious super greens mixes and other supplements, every product is non-GMO, third-party tested, and comes in a variety of drool-worthy flavors. Fuel your body and transform your life. Shop Clean Simple Eats supplements.
You're listening to the Utah Checkdown Podcast. And now your hosts, Josh Furlong and Josh Newman.
Welcome back to another edition of the Utah Checkdown Podcast. My name is Josh Furlong, and I'm joined with co-host Josh Newman. Josh, how are we feeling today?
Feeling good. Little cool out, nice little cold fall air, bit of drizzle in the Sugar House neighborhood. Feeling good.
I'm a little tired. Yesterday was like I felt like an 18-hour day. Utah decided to have everything that it possibly wanted to do yesterday. So that was fun. It's funny, after the men's basketball game, I was walking down to do the post-game presser, and I had a half drunken, I don't know. I'm not drank.
Drunk, whatever, monster
anyway. In my hand, and one of the Utah staffers looked at me, and they're like, really? This time of the night, you're going to be able to sleep? And I said, yes, I will, but...
I drink too much coffee. Okay. I'm very upfront
French
about that,
but you drink stuff. So that's good.
You drink Monsters and Mountain Dew at some early and late hours. Like, I've worked enough with you. I have this thing about soda/carbonation, like too early or too late in the day. That's just me. That doesn't bother you at all, which I respect.
No, it doesn't. I try not to drink as much of that stuff, but then this time of the season comes and it's just like, ugh. Like, I had that Monster sitting in my bag, and I don't like to drink them a ton, but I'll pull them out every once in a while, and that kept me alive yesterday, I'm not going to lie. So, you know, if Monster wants to sponsor me, here we go.
I mean, jokes aside, this is a tough time of year to be a beat reporter. I am not a beat reporter still, technically. I'm not doing as much as I once was, but I'm plenty of years where you get to November, and it's like, yeah, you've got football in the morning, and football in the afternoon, and a basketball game. But yesterday was nuts. Mondays are always crazy. You had the Kyle Whittingham press conference in the morning. You had a women's basketball game at 4.
Yep.
You had football player availability at like 5:30, which you left the Huntsman Center to get to football.
Yeah.
And then after football ended, you had the men's basketball game at 7:30. So that is a very full day. That's probably as full of a day covering Utah as you could possibly have. And look, credit to you, that was a long, long day, and you somehow managed to hit it all and cover and write it all. So
it was
really
crazy, like, being able to like leave football and then hustle back to the Huntsman Center. I left my computer there, so it wasn't like I had to get bag checked or anything, but I hustled in and I got down to the post game press conference. Lynn had answered maybe one or two questions by the time I got there, and I was still able to get all my stuff in. And I was like, okay. I had to take a deep breath and everything was fine, but man, those are a hustle. I haven't had to do it that like chaotic in a long time, but here we are. So,
and there was like real like news coming out of that women's basketball game.
Seriously.
Which we're gonna get to later. So that certainly complicated the workday a little bit.
Exactly, but you know, that's what we do. I do it for you guys.
We signed up for it.
Appreciate it, all right? Appreciate it.
No doubt.
Just kidding.
Get on it, guys.
All right.
Keep clicking the podcast.
Let's jump into it. Let's recap the Pac-12 in football. We're going to stick with football, obviously, and then we'll get some basketball. We'll sprinkle in more basketball as the season gets on, but obviously this is full football season, so we're not going to spend too much time on basketball. But looking back on the Pac-12 over the weekend, there was, you know, everybody was in action. There was some good games going on. Obviously, Arizona UCLA, Washington USC. Those are probably the two biggest games there. But just overall, what were your impressions of this weekend?
Yeah, you know, as you said, full weekend, everybody in action. Obviously, much of the attention Pac-12-wise was centered on the LA Coliseum and Washington going into USC. Washington, you know, remains unbeaten, right? The lone unbeaten Pac-12 team winning that game, 52-42. Washington now 9-0 overall, 6-0 in the Pac-12. The only unbeaten team in the Pac-12. They were number 5 in last week's initial college football playoff rankings. As we're sitting here now, right, today's Tuesday. The new CFP rankings come out this evening. Was very excited to watch that game. We walked out together leaving Rice-Eccles Saturday, and you know, I think we both agreed that USC was at least capable of beating Washington. Mm-hmm. I wasn't expecting a ton of defense, okay, but the lack of defense specifically, well, look, Washington doesn't really play defense either, but no. the lack of defense from USC, not even like before first contact, these Washington receivers and rushers and even Penix, you're gaining 7-8 yards before you're even touched by a USC receiver. And obviously, you know, in the wake of that, Alex Grinch, right, the much maligned defensive coordinator from USC, was fired earlier this week. Just a startling lack of defense from USC. And that is, I know I'm saying that knowing that their defense is bad, but I was still stunned at the lack of defense.
The crazy thing, 94 points scored in that game, 94. And this comes a week after, California pushed USC to a 50-49 win. I mean, there was no defense in the last few weeks for USC. They clearly have issues. Alex Grinch shouldn't have been back beginning of this season. Utah's happy he was back. This is a situation where USC has one of the most talented quarterbacks in all of the country, and it's been wasted in large part because of its defense. And this isn't new. I mean, Lincoln Riley's had Alex Grinch for years, dating back to when he was at Oklahoma. So, you know, this is just who Lincoln Riley's been. He's cared more about offense and not defense, and it's hurt him, right? Like, he hasn't been able to get to where he wants. But I think, you know, this was the interesting thing where that game, it was blow for blow, right? Especially in that first half. Both of these teams were going after each other. It was a fun, riveting game where, you know, one team would get an advantage and then the other would respond. And the other would maybe get a stop and then the other would respond and then the other would, you know, get an advantage. And it was just kind of this fun back and forth game. And, you know, listening to Kirk Herbstreit and Chris Fowler, they were talking about you can't give the ball to Caleb Williams with any time, right? Especially going into the end of the first half. They were saying you give him 30 seconds and he'll still find a way to manufacture a drive. Which was true. The difference that changed in that second half, though, was that Washington found a running game, right? And it completely changed the dynamic of that game because they were able to just dominate USC, and USC had no answers for it. I think one of the most telling thing, though, is in this game, you know, a lot of people wanted to point to Caleb Williams as saying, look, he's entitled, you know, he doesn't really want to compete. You know, there's a lot of conversations about him just shutting down the season after they lost to Utah. You know, all of that's BS. And should never have happened. He's a true competitor, right? Like, you can say what you want about, you know, what he does with his fingernails or like how you feel he's entitled or whatever that may be. But the dude's a legit competitor, and you can tell that by the fact that he went up into the stands. He was crying in his mom's arms. I mean, like, this is a true competitor's mentality where he was frustrated that he's not able to do what he wants. So, like, at the end of the day, like, look, you can fan how you want, but this is a kid that is working his butt off to be able to compete. And whether, you know, football works out long-term for him, who cares? Like, he is doing everything that he needs to put his team in a position to win. You can't blame any of that on Caleb Williams. That was all on the defense. This is a team that is built to compete, except one half of the ball is just significantly undercut because of who they had as a defensive coordinator and maybe just the defensive strategies in general. But, you know, I digress. You know, it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. Washington is still an elite team. You know, they're not perfect by any means, you know, and we'll talk about them more, especially on Thursday when we break down that game. But this is, you know, this is where they're at, right? Like, Washington is a good team. They've got a good, capable quarterback. They've got phenomenal wide receivers, one of which who hasn't even really played much this season because he's been injured. This is where it's at, right? Washington is the favorite, but I will still say Oregon, which you look at the result that they had, it was a 63-19 win over California. You may just gloss over that, but this Oregon team is poised to absolutely come back and win the conference. And that's my opinion right now. I still think Oregon is the best, regardless of what happened, you know, on Saturday. I'm curious to see how this USC-Washington game is. That one is – Oregon is favored by 16.5 against USC. So, you know, I'm interested, but maybe that's a long-winded answer to – it was fun.
Just to back up 1 second to something you said about, you know, Caleb Williams and the notion of opting out after the USC loss. A lot of that, most of that is because Emmanuel Acho went on –
yeah.
Twitter and kind of lob that out there as like, well, he should opt out. And look, Twitter is the best thing to happen to sports journalism, but also the worst thing.
Yeah.
Because somebody with a platform like that can put that out there and people jump all over it and they kind of take it as gospel. They take it as an assumption. Nobody ever said that Caleb Williams would be opting out, at least not before a bowl game. Okay. Not Williams himself and not Lincoln Riley. His parent, nobody. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think that kid is a gamer. I think he works hard. I think he plays hard. He wears his emotions on his sleeve, sometimes for better or worse, right? I think we all saw the video after the Cole Becker kick to beat USC, right? Caleb Williams' body language was not good, right? Mm-hmm. He sat on the bench. He didn't shake hands, none of that. But, yeah, Twitter is the best and worst thing to happen to our industry. And I think the opting out thing with Caleb Williams, that's one of those things where that's like the dark side, the bad side of Twitter in terms of journalism and what we do every day. I am obviously, you know, I watch an inordinate amount of Pac-12 football, as I'm sure you do as well, since we're in the market and we're covering it. The more I watch Oregon, including in person against Utah, the more I watch Oregon, the more they strike me still as the maybe not the best team in the conference, but certainly the most balanced and the most capable, and just the different things that they can do on both sides of the ball. You have referenced a lot that Washington is a little more one-dimensional than Oregon. Washington is terrific, right? Number one passing offense in the country with Michael Penix Jr. and the receivers. Oregon is a little more balanced and can do a little bit more. And I think if you line up those two teams again, Washington and Oregon right now, I think Oregon wins that game. Again, just with each passing week, Oregon continues to look impressive. And look, Washington is winning, but maybe we just don't like the way that they're winning these games, right? You know, they had to survive against Arizona State, right? The pick six late won that game. Stanford gave them some trouble. A USC team with no defense, they gave them some trouble. So they're winning games. They're just not getting style points, right? Maybe we don't like the way they're winning. Oregon has been a little more, what's the word? Oregon has been a little bit more definitive in the way they're winning games, the way they're bludgeoning teams, right? Including Utah. So, you know, it's a little hard to differentiate between Washington and Oregon. Like, I can sit here and my belief is that Oregon is the best team or the most capable team. Fact remains, Washington beat Oregon. So that, you know, that has to come into the conversation. And look, maybe we'll get a second Washington-Oregon game. I think that would be a lot of fun, just as, you know, if both those teams win out the final three regular season games, you're looking at a situation where you have Washington, Oregon with the, you know, the I-5 rivalry. Obviously, they're blood rivals forever. In the last Pac-12 championship game, potentially with the winner going to the college football playoff, and Allegiant Stadium in Vegas, for those two teams with those stakes, would be a circus. You know, we saw two very good, very engaged crowds the last 2 years when Utah played in the Pac-12 title game. They would pale in comparison to what a Washington-Oregon conference championship game with the CFP at stake would be. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, I think that would be, it would be a lot of fun as an objective observer of football. You want to see a fun, you know, game like that. You see a repeat of it. I think it would be a lot of fun. You know, I'm clearly on the record because as an AP voter, I can slate these teams how I want, and I have Oregon ahead of Washington by one spot, and Washington fans weren't too happy with me this week. This isn't the first week I've had them there for whatever, but you know, it gets picked up.
I can't imagine the email you get every Monday and Tuesday.
It depends.
About your AP poll?
It varies, you know, and honestly, years ago I used to feed it by answering a lot of them, and that would just bring a lot more. So
yeah,
within reason, I've tried to stay off of that, and it actually dies down pretty quickly. But, you know, my reasoning here is, look, most of the time in head-to-head situations, you know, I'm always going to pick the team that is the winner of that game, right? Like, you have to value the results on the field because that is what we have, right? Sometimes the worst team wins, but you still have to value that. To me, the reason why I've done that is simply because, like I've mentioned, I think Oregon is the most complete team. That doesn't change that. But I think the biggest difference is, I think Oregon, they've hit a switch, right? Since that Washington game, there's been something different about this Oregon team. And granted, they're playing different competition and everything's changed that way. But there's been a noticeable difference about Oregon right now. They sense something, right? They sense that they are a really good team, and they've come together and they're doing really well. That's not to say Washington hasn't. I still think Washington is clearly one of the best teams in the Pac-12. But for me, that's what gives me that extra notch above them, right? Is I think Oregon, maybe it is the style points. Maybe I'm looking at that a little bit and weighing that a little too heavily. But I think that's important, right? And ultimately, like, my rankings and even to some extent, the college football playoff rankings aren't really going to matter until the very end. If these two teams are, you know, where we think they'll probably end up, that's going to be figured out, right? And either way, unless something happens to either one of these teams along the way, maybe, you know, Utah decides to disrupt that by beating Washington, both of these teams are probably in line for a college football playoff or the bowl game. the New Year's Six.
Bowl. Yeah.
So playoff or New Year's Six bowl. Clearly, yeah. I'm you know, my brain is fried, but you know, this is a great spot for both of these teams. You know, I think this is where the league is destined. And look, I don't want to spend too much time on recapping this. But I think this is kind of the two top teams, and they deserve the attention. Outside of that, I think Arizona is worth talking about. You know, that's also another team that Utah has to go on the road to face. We'll obviously discuss that more next week. But Noah Fifita, ever since he got under center, has completely changed the dynamic of the team. I think it's very much so like a Cam Rising in that San Diego State game. There's a re-energizing moment with the team where they just bought in. And for whatever reason, Noah Fifita mixed with Jed Fish equals great Arizona football, right? Like, this is a good team. I'm excited to see what they do. I think there's a lot of, you know, progress that's been made under Jed Fish, and I think you're finally starting to see the fruits of that. I'm curious to see how it develops and you know, what happens there. But you know, this is an Arizona team that you don't want to take lightly. I think they have a lot of talent. You know, they're not there yet, but they've got a lot of talent that is starting to kind of rise up, and you're going to see them as a very good team.
Yeah, you know, they're sitting at two conference losses here as mid-November approaches. So, you know, they're not out of the mix for the Pac-12 championship game. Look, they don't have the tiebreaker against USC. They still have to play Utah, as you said, next week in Tucson. Jed Fish has done a really, really good job at a program, quite honestly, that had sort of hit rock bottom, had you know, not played well for a number of years, specifically under Kevin Sumlin, right, the previous head coach. Jed Fish came in a couple of years ago, and you know, he didn't really mince words. I remember, you know, watching the introductory press conference and reading some things from the local press, and he didn't paint it as, look, this is going to happen like immediately and tomorrow. No, you know, it's a process. You have to recruit. You have to instill a culture, and he's done that. You know, the fact that Arizona is at 6 wins and is now bowl eligible, that's a big deal. Arizona hadn't been to a bowl game since, I believe, 2017. Noah Fifita has been a revelation, you know, quite honestly, since he took over for Jaden Delora. And yeah, there's a bit of, you know, Cam Rising 2021 San Diego State energy there. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I do tend to agree with you that they probably don't have the horses to get to Vegas. But the fact that we're even talking about this, right, two loss Arizona still technically in the mix, the fact that we're even talking about this on November 7th really speaks to the job that Jed Fish and that staff have done.
Agreed. Let's end it there. I don't think we have to do much more of the Pac-12. Obviously, this is a Utah podcast, and you know, we want to get into the meat of that. And so with that, Mr. Newman, The people we're getting serious now.
Whoa.
The people want to know, why do you hate fun football? Why can't you I mean, you're a Jets fan.
People got so angry.
Why don't you let people have fun and let people score touchdowns at the end of the game instead of nailing it? I want answers, so do the people. So let's hear it.
Yeah. I'm sorry I hate the fifth string running back running for a touchdown at the end. Let me start with this. I should not tweet immediately after games because my head is just not there and I'm probably not thinking. If anybody was under a rock last week, right, Utah was up 48-3 with the ball late. It was all reserves. It was all backups. I wish I had the play chart in front of me, but like Charlie Vincent ran on a third down. I believe he was a yard short. They go for it on fourth. And he ends up scrambling up the middle down the left side for a touchdown with like very little time remaining. And my immediate thought was like, why? Like, take a few knees. Did they have timeouts left? They probably had timeouts left, right?
I think Arizona State had maybe used them all, didn't they?
All right, I don't remember. It doesn't matter. My initial knee jerk reaction to that was, why are we running the ball up 48-3? Take two knees, take three knees, and get out of there. Utah fans who keep everything positive, guys, right? You know, Utah fans did not take too kindly to my opinion there. And then I answered a Twitter mention and I doubled down. It's like, all right, fine. You know, we get into the post-game press conference. You asked Kyle about that before I could get to it. And he basically said, they weren't playing with the intention like, hey, we have to score again. But he made some like half jokingly, like, you know, I don't think that that Kenny Dillingham, right, the coach at Arizona State, would appreciate if we like laid down. Kenny Dillingham said the same thing in his press conference, to his credit. And again, I'm paraphrasing Kenny Dillingham. Look, it's our job to stop Utah. I wouldn't have minded if they started throwing it. That's their job. That, you know, it's our job to stop them. Bah, bah, bah. Are we really still talking about this? Like, all right, I tweeted something. It might not have been like the correct, super great take. It's not the first bad take I've had. It's not going to be the last bad take I've had. Good for Charlie Vincent, right? Local kid from East High School. Second career touchdown. Sweet. I hope everybody had fun in my mentions. It got pretty heavy in there. And yeah, cool.
I love it. I don't think it's a bad take, honestly. Like, I think you're spot on. You know, most of the times Kyle is nailing it. I don't know why he was going for it, but at the end of the day, like Kenny Dillingham said, we're a Power 5 team. We deserve to be able to compete against that, and if we can't stop it, you know, that's on us. So you can take whichever side of the coin you want on that one, and I don't think you're ultimately wrong, right? Like, whether Utah won 48-3 or 55-3 didn't ultimately matter. I don't think they're going back to Arizona and looking, you know, oh man, that last touchdown really hurt. But at the same time, you know, I also don't think that Kyle was expecting Charlie to kind of escape for that. And so there really wasn't a worry. It was like, okay, we'll get 3 yards and be fine.
And that's kind of the point. And, you know, jokes aside, somebody in my mentions like made a good point that night. He said, you know, not all late mop-up touchdowns are created equally.
Yeah.
And he's right. Now, again, Kyle did not, you know, send the offense back out there. He didn't give it to Charlie Vincent with the intention of like, we have to score again. And I'm pretty sure Kyle did not believe that on fourth and one that Charlie Vincent was going to go for 22 or 24 yards or whatever and score a touchdown. So I think that is a good point. That is some context. Not all mop-up touchdowns are created equally. We do need to clarify that, like, no, they were not, like, going with the intention of, like, hammering the rock. Fine. I still kind of think, why aren't you taking a knee? Why aren't you taking two knees and getting out of there? But ultimately, this is kind of at least to me, it's kind of a non-issue. Again, going back to the good of Twitter, the bad of Twitter, from my end of things, I should, you know, and I admit, I should probably take a breath in the immediate, like, post-game haze and, like, not
just own it, man.
In my opinion,
just keep it
just
up.
Just go for it.
Just all do
right.
it.
I mean, that's probably my MO anyway. You're right.
Just ask for forgiveness later, you know?
I'm a bit of an act now, ask forgiveness later type of guy. So Yeah, that fits.
You enamored a lot of Utah fans years ago with your BYU take. So, I mean, you know, you've had some moments.
Today's election day. I could probably be elected mayor of certain Utah towns based on my BYU takes.
Yeah.
But
we'll avoid those ones today.
Yeah.
All right. Well, for the actual game, obviously Utah did win 55-3, 52-point victory. It's the largest margin of victory for Utah in the Pac-12. That's, you know, it's pretty impressive. Utah rushed, yeah, or not rushed. They totaled 513 yards, held Arizona State to 83 yards. One of the AP writers, he was not from Utah, but he said that this is the first time since at least 2000 that a team has gone for over 500 yards while holding a team for less than 100. So, you know, there was a lot going on in that game, and it was interesting. You know, I mean, I think based on where Utah was a week prior, you know, getting absolutely beat down by Oregon, and the score didn't really reflect how bad that game was for Utah. This is, you know, this was a good game for Utah, right? It was a get-right game, and it showed that Utah has some moxie still and that they're not going to kind of shrink. And, you know, say what you will about, you know, how this season has developed and, you know, the Cam Rising saga and the Brant Keithy saga and all that other stuff. I mean, this is a team that's 7-2. You know, they have arguably their toughest schedule of all time, and they're still doing it. They're still in the thick of the Pac-12 title game contention. Obviously, you've got games against Washington and Arizona and Colorado left, but I mean, this is where you want to be, right? Like, Kyle has a very realistic possibility to get to 10 wins this season, including a bowl game, and that's something that they're going to recruit to. That's something that helps. So,
yeah. You
know, you can say what you want about how this season has gone, and I think, you know, I've heard a lot of different takes on how this season has gone. It's been kind of the most frustratingly awesome season for a lot of people. Other people have different takes and don't really like Bryson Barnes, or they don't like that Nate Johnson isn't starting anymore and they want Cam Rising to move on. I mean, there's been a lot of takes this season. None of them are necessarily wrong, but none of them are right either, because there's just so much that's happened. So I think that's kind of where this Utah team's at. They're good enough to be able to compete. But they're also not quite at that upper echelon level with, like, Oregon, and maybe we'll see what that is with Washington on Saturday to be able to compete at that level. But they also could. So I don't know. It's been an interesting season for Utah, but, you know, I think you have to kind of take it for what it's worth and have some fun with it.
Yeah, I think if you're talking about the hierarchy or the upper tier of the Pac-12, I think after Washington and Oregon, I think there's a pretty sizable gap between those two, and then, you know, whatever order you want to put them in between Oregon State, Arizona, Utah, USC. I think there's a pretty large gap after number two. In terms of Saturday, look, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about, you know, the offense and how it's been a bad year for the offense. And part of that was, you know, the bungling of the, not so much the Rising situation, but how you were going about handing out reps while Rising was still trying to work his way back. Saturday was, you know, that's not a game that you should really complain too much about. And I keep thinking about the first two drives. When you consider what Utah's offense looked like versus Oregon, and then a week later, you're coming out and you look really, really good on offense the first two drives. And when I say really good, I mean that's Bryson Barnes making decisions, and Jaquindon Jackson, you know, putting his shoulder down and going for 4, 5, 6 yards a clip. Devon Vele kind of got off the schneid there, right? He hadn't had a touchdown catch in the first 8 games, had 2 in the first quarter against Arizona State. You know, they just look really, really good and really, really cohesive. And, you know, we talked to Kyle Whittingham post-game, and, you know, he said again that Bryson Barnes, you know, knows the playbook inside and out. You know, he's on the level of, you know, maybe not the, you know, the level of Rising in terms of like the intimate knowledge of the playbook, but like very close. It's just that Andy Ludwig has not been opening up the playbook fully. Well, he opened up the playbook a little bit more for Barnes. And, you know, they went tempo in the second quarter and there were designed runs for Bryson Barnes. So Andy Ludwig kind of, you know, letting his guard down a little bit, trusting Bryson Barnes a little bit more. Now, remember, Bryson Barnes, you know, folk hero in the Rose Bowl and the Washington State game, blah, blah, blah. He has not had a game plan tailored to him until a month ago. And he hadn't been getting, you know, all of the first team reps in a practice situation until a month ago. So, you know, the Oregon game notwithstanding, I think between Cal and USC and Arizona State, I think you're starting to see an increased level of comfort from Barnes on the field. And that is the byproduct of increased trust from Ludwig and an increased, Ludwig trusting him to the point where, okay, we can open up a playbook now. We can trust him with this. We can trust him with that, which you weren't getting from those two 3 weeks ago. I think that's a very, you can't overstate how important it is to have trust between the OC and the starting quarterback. And I think you're starting to see that much more now.
And I think that was most evident in two plays to me. Bryson, we've seen him be able to have some successes, but he hasn't really been able to stand out. And he had a career night with career day. We don't have night games at Utah anymore.
We don't do night games in Utah, sir. Thank you.
But he had four touchdown passes for a career day. But the two telling ones to me was the second touchdown to Devon Vele. And part of that was Bryson stayed in the pocket. He had a guy rushing him. He was being under pressure. He remained composed. And he threw a ball in anticipation that Vele was going to be there. Bryson hasn't done that, right? Like, he's very rarely thrown a ball to a spot hoping that a receiver will be there. And it wasn't a hope in the sense that, like, I'm just going to hope that Vele's there. The designed run was for Vele to come across the back end of the end zone, and Vele was where he was supposed to be, and Bryson put it in the exact spot that he was supposed to be. He was covered, right? Like, he was covered by a DB. There was nobody there that could kind of foresee that. It was just the read that he needed to take. And that shows the next level of where Bryson's taking it. Look, do I still think he's the upper echelon quarterback? No. But I think we're starting to see that maybe his ceiling can be a little bit higher than we expected, right? I think if he can start making these reads and kind of anticipating a little bit more, Bryson can be absolutely a great quarterback for this Utah team, and we saw that. The other one was the ball in the end zone to Muneer McClain. On first take, I thought it was an undershot ball, right? Like, we're seeing that go through the air. Oh, yeah. Like, I thought for sure.
Yeah.
But then you go watch the replay, and McClain is high-pointing it, right? Like, he got to the ball. It was perfectly placed. You know, he mossed the defender, and everything was there. These are the plays that are showing, where Bryson has been able to go, right? Like, he's always been able to have a good arm. I don't think anybody's doubted his arm. It's more just the accuracy and making sure that he could be where he needs to be. But now it's trusting himself. He's trusting himself to be able to say, okay, Andy has called this play for me. I know that the wide receiver may not be there yet, but I'm going to do that. That's where quarterbacks start taking it to that next level, right? Yeah. Especially when you get to the NFL, and that's a whole different game. You have to trust that the route is the route that's being run, right? Like, if you're going, you don't have very many gaps in that defense to be able to just say, okay, I'm going to wait for a guy to get open. You're throwing on anticipation. That's where Bryson is starting to get to. Is he still, where he needs to be? No. But I think, like you mentioned, Andy Ludwig feels much more comfortable with the playbook to be able to allow him to do it. There was a lot of RPO stuff. He was making great reads. They used bubble screens, which we haven't seen. It's funny because years ago, Utah used to run a billion bubble screens that would get blown up 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage, but they continue to do it. That went away for a while, but Utah used that. They used, end-arounds. They used all these different plays in the playbook. That this game, you could point to Arizona State and being like, oh, they only have 2 wins to the season. Like, this is clearly like a game where they're just going to go have fun. And everybody
plays defense.
They do. And that's the thing. The funny thing to me about this game is everybody wants to point, well, Arizona State was injured, and they only brought 6 scholarship offensive linemen. Sure, but that's on offense. What did you do on defense, right? Like, nobody's blaming you for the offensive performance, but for a defense that has been pretty remarkable for the season, held Washington, beat Washington State, they have a good defense. Utah absolutely just opened up the playbook and took it to them. And so for that reason, you have to be optimistic about what Andy Ludwig is doing with Bryson Barnes, what Bryson Barnes is doing with, Andy Ludwig's tutelage. And I think you're starting to see that confidence show, right? Like, we've started to see it each week. And that has to give you optimism as a Utah fan to know, okay, look, Bryson may not be who we thought we were going to be at, but at least we have somebody that is understanding the offense, and now that there's confidence, he's been able to do it at a much better rate.
Clean Simple Eats is elevating lives through food, fitness, and the best-tasting supplements on the planet. The rapidly growing health and wellness industry leader is committed to providing clean supplements made with the highest quality ingredients. Fuel your body and shop clean, simple eats.
So now I have, well, I always have 50 questions going into a game, but like two things that have been on my mind. Okay, you've seen, you know, the maturation of Bryson Barnes and he's taking steps forward. Now, can you do it in a like real deal road environment
Sure.
where it's going to be 67,000 people for a 12:30 game? Washington has everything to play for, right? Playing for the college football playoff. Can you go into that environment and, you know, replicate those things? Can you do those things again?
He did against and USC, then, though. I mean, it's different stakes, right? But he did.
The environment at Washington is going to dwarf what we saw at USC. Fourth quarter notwithstanding, like fourth quarter at USC, standing on the field, that place got loud. Washington, it's going to be a different type of deal. Question number two, I'm not a football coach, okay, but did you show too much going into that Washington game? Like, you didn't have to be running RPO. You didn't have to flex out your running backs. They opened up the playbook, but do you regret putting those things on film for Washington to look at? I'm probably overthinking that.
And to me, I say why not, right? Because now what?
Sure,
I mean,
sure.
There's two sides of that coin, right? Like, one is you open up the playbook against Washington; they've never seen it before and don't know that you're capable of it, you know, and that makes it different. To me, like, I viewed it as, look, this is what we're capable of. Now you can't just, you know, isolate us to one thing, and so you're keeping Washington guessing a little bit, especially for a defense. It's not USC bad, but it's not quite great either. Maybe that adds a little bit more doubt, and maybe that's what they're trying to do, is just say, look, we can do a lot of these things, and this is how we're going to do it. I don't know, right? Like you said, I'm not a coach. I obviously don't understand what their design strategy was there. I don't think they needed to open it up as much as they did against Arizona State. But for whatever reason, they felt comfortable doing that, knowing that Washington is going to see that tape and have it available for them. And they, you know, I'll point out, they did that without Sione Vaki. And I think that's the biggest indication of the improvement of this offense is, you know, a couple weeks ago, it's now been 3 weeks that Sione Vaki came in and just kind of revolutionized that offense, gave it the spark that it needed. You know, everybody was like, okay, how much are we going to put him over? And is that where we're going to be a permanent spot for Vaki? You know, you go 2 weeks and he does great things, and then he's, you know, obviously absent for the most part in the Oregon game. They did a good job of neutralizing him. He was sick, also a little bit banged up, so they were kind of limiting him. Then you don't get him at all this last week. I think that kind of shows where this Utah offense can be. They're starting to get that confidence. Devon Vele's catching pretty much every pass that's coming his way, as long as it's on target. He's having great...
He's been targeted 10 times the last two games, 7 catches. So he's caught 14 balls on 20 targets. That's good production,
yeah,
you know, versus what he was doing earlier. He is starting to, and I wrote this for the Sunday piece, like, this is why Devon Vele came back to school, because he needed / wanted more film. Last season for him, when he had, you know, 50 catches and 7 touchdowns, that was a breakout season for him. He said himself late in the year last year that he was going to leave for the NFL, because he knew that time was against them already as a returned missionary at 24 years old. You know, things obviously change, right? Rising changes mind. Keithy changes mind. That was a big part of why Vele came back, is because he needed film, right, with the experienced quarterback and the offense and the whole thing. Hasn't really panned out for Vele, right, because he spent the month of September with the quarterback situation completely up in the air, couldn't get it straightened out. Well, now for the last 3 or 4 weeks, the quarterback situation has been straightened out. And Bryson Barnes is getting all the first-team reps, which means he's working every day with Vele. And it seems clear to me that they've built a rapport, and that is now, again, a thing. Vele becoming your number one wide receiver option, and Bryson Barnes is looking for Vele like he's a number one guy, and Vele is producing like he's a number one guy.
Well, and you know, over this season, there's been so many different players that the quarterbacks have been able to throw to, and it hasn't always been consistent. But like you mentioned, I think Vele is starting to take that next step, right? He is that number one target. He's the guy that they can utilize in a lot of different scenarios. You know, they still want to keep using that reverse pass where he gets out and does it. So maybe we get that. Side note, he was throwing with Cam Rising yesterday. That was pretty fun.
Vele was throwing darts, everybody, after practice in the indoor facility. Cam Rising, Nate Johnson, and Devon Vele throwing darts to each other from like 40 yards out.
I still love that Cam's wearing his Utah jersey to that. Like, to me, that's, I don't know, this is a total side tangent, but like, for, there's been a lot of rumors this week about Cam, you know, and the suitors that may be coming after him, and, you know, and I'm not saying that they're not legitimate in the sense that there's these teams coming after him, but it's amazing to me that he still is dressing the part. He's still staying after and working on throws. And some of it's gimmicky, right? Like, they're trying to throw it through the uprights of the field.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, they're half joking around. But yeah,
like, it's still something there. Either way, like, the point being made, like, Vele has taken, you know, the next step. He's been able to kind of move forward. And I think that actually helps him at the next level, is that he was able to battle through the adversity of a quarterback. He's still stuck with it. You know, he's starting to separate himself as the guy. You know, Kyle's always kind of praised Devon and kind of said that he is their number one guy, but we haven't always seen that. But you're starting to get there. Look, he's not putting up like massive numbers. He's not like, you know, catching 150 yards or something like that, but he's effective in what he needs to do. I believe, if I remember right, and I have to go back and watch it, I don't know if that first touchdown of his was the designed route. I think he just got open and worked. The second one was, the first one, I don't think. But I think that's where it is. He's taking it to that next level where it's working, you know, and that's giving Bryson a lot of confidence. That's giving Vele a lot of confidence. This is just an offense that is feeling a lot more confident, and they've got what they need to be able to move forward. Will that continue? Who knows? I mean, it's a week-to-week process, and that's what we continue to report on. But, I mean, it's good news for Utah so far.
Yeah, no, that, I think, you know, I watched that film a couple of times. The first touchdown, it looked like it was a miscommunication by the defense at the line of scrimmage, and Vele just literally just ran 6 yards and put his arms up, hey, I'm open, and that was it. So rather be lucky than good. Rather be lucky than good. That was a gigantic miscommunication by the Arizona State defense, and Vele was wide open.
So going back to the Vaki stuff, obviously we didn't see him last week, but Nate Johnson got a little bit of touch. Obviously Utah was up by a large margin, but he escapes for a 59-yard touchdown on his second snap while he's in. The dude can still play, right? Like, and I think that's there. If I remember right, were you the one that asked the question on Monday if he still has a role, or was that somebody else? I'm trying to remember.
I believe that was Joe Cole from the Deseret News who asked I forget his exact wording, but Joe Coles from the D News asked, is there any plan for a Nate Johnson package at Washington? You know, Sione Vaki, I don't believe Sione played any offensive snaps against Arizona State. He's been sick. He's been a little banged up. He was sick for the Oregon game. And quite frankly, you didn't need Sione Vaki against Arizona State. So that was a day where, you know, you could kind of like reel things back, let Sione play his, you know, 50, 55 snaps on defense and try to move forward. So now you have a bit of an interesting, well, I think it's interesting. Some people might not. You have a situation now where, okay, Nate Johnson is kind of like, you know, you were reminded on Saturday about what he can do, right? He takes a snap, you know, reads it, and, you know, threw the hole, and he was gone. And he used that 10-3 speed, and he went for a 59-yard touchdown. Nobody's ever denied that Nate Johnson, you know, can't play football. Anybody saying that is just uninformed. I think it had gotten to a situation with Johnson where, you know, the offense was a mess, and he was not playing with confidence, and he was ineffective, and Barnes gave you the best chance to win as the quarterback, which is still the case.
Yep.
Bryson Barnes still gives you the best chance to win a quarterback. But now, and look, Andy Ludwig has said this, and Kyle has said this, you can't be finding reps for Barnes and Nate Johnson and Sione Vaki. I still think Sione Vaki, if you're looking for that, you know, extra element of, you know, dynamic, to put Vaki in there in wildcat situations, direct snap situations, running back, flex him out, whatever, I still think it's Vaki over Nate Johnson. But again, Nate Johnson gave you a bit of a reminder. It's like, hey, I'm still here, and hey, I'm still preparing the way that I've always prepared. And, you know, that's been his MO since high school, that he was going to continue to prepare and not put his head down, because you, and this is a cliche, like, you never know when your number might get called. And that game got out of hand, and Bryson Barnes was done for the day. And here comes Nate Johnson, and he did what he did. So it'll be interesting, you know, moving forward. I asked Kyle yesterday, you know, is the plan for Vaki still, you know, 70% defense, 30% offense? Kyle indicated that it was. So, Yeah, I think we're going to see Sione Vaki some more on offense, you know, presuming he's a little less banged up and a little less sick. But yeah, it's something worth pondering what you do with Vaki and Nate Johnson now that Nate Johnson did what he did against Arizona State.
And to me, like, and I don't know if this actually can work just based on the depth at quarterback, but I think what you can do is move Nate Johnson as a running back, right? Like, Utah needs help there, and that's not to say that they don't have players there. Obviously, DeJon Stanley is getting some reps, and he's able to be in there. But with JaQuindon Jackson banged up, and he's going to continue to try to fight as much as he can. I you know, Whittingham seemed a little, not pessimistic is not the right word, but just kind of doubtful that JaQuindon is fully ready to go on Saturday. He hasn't been ready to go all season.
He was a little wishy-washy on the subject.
Yeah, I mean, but that's just where Jackson's been all season, right? Like, he's got a high ankle sprain. Those don't heal overnight. You know, you need rest. But he continues to fight through it and continue to go. So as long as he's willing to go, there's not really any fear that he's going to do more damage. It's just a sprain. It's just more, can he play through the pain? And obviously, you know, if you wanted to play a drinking game, you'd probably be pretty drunk every time he got injured in a game. But I don't know if we're going to go that far. Sorry, that was bad. But no, I mean, like, you have to give him credit for his moxie and being able to stay in there and try to win. But with that being said, that's where Nate can maybe fill in some of these roles, right? Like, you can put Vaki in these, you know, the different situations, but maybe you put Nate in kind of similar situations, but with different looks, right? That doesn't mean it has to be a permanent thing. It doesn't have to be something where you, like it was with JaQuindon last year, where you say, no, this is his permanent role moving forward. I still personally think that that's probably where it needs to be going forward, is either as a slot receiver or something like that. But I think there's a space, right? I think if they want to put Vaki and Nate Johnson out there in, you know, the same game, I think they can do it. I just think those reps get far. It becomes much more difficult to utilize that, because now you've got two gadgety guys that are trying to get the same thing. So, and like you said, if you're going to take it, Sione is probably going to be the better guy. He's proven that he can kind of be more versatile than Nate can. But don't sleep on Nate, right? Like, I don't think he's still the quarterback option, and obviously he's an emergency situation, but I think it's kind of moved past the point where he is in the position that he's supposed to be in. I think moving forward, if he wants to stay at Utah, I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to push him into another position.
Yeah, that's a potential, like, pretty big offseason storyline. Yeah. Is what the future of Nate Johnson looks like, because if he's not going to be the quarterback in 24, look, we don't know that yet. Like, we don't know who's coming from the portal or who's leaving or what, but if it becomes clear that Johnson is not the quarterback, or more specifically, as you said, not a quarterback anymore, and they're going to try to move him to the slot or to running back, I do wonder if he sticks around, because he's been very clear in the past, and so has Jerome Johnson, Nate's dad, that you know, that Nate is a quarterback and he wants to play quarterback. And they went through a lot during the recruitment process in the middle of COVID to, you know, he went through a lot to prove himself as a college Power Five level quarterback. He was a elite 11 finalist in between his junior and senior year at Clovis in Fresno. So yeah, a lot of questions there, but that is a potential, like, big offseason storyline. Just, you know, the quarterback situation in general with Rising is the number one storyline. But within the quarterback room, Nate Johnson potentially, you know, moving positions or leaving Utah entirely, there's a lot of intrigue there based on things that have been said, things that have been promised, and things that have been done to this point.
And we're getting closer to that stage where we're going to get some answers, right? Like, the realistic thing is, Cam's probably going to have to start answering questions about this in the next 3 or 4 weeks. He doesn't. I'll say that. He doesn't. Utah wants him to, right? Because if they can't get a commitment from Cam going into the bowl game, not that he's playing in the bowl, but I think if you don't have him committed to the next season, that makes it very difficult as those transfer portal QBs come in. What are you going to do? So I think for Utah, there's a ton of pressure. Cam, he can drag this out as long as he wants, although I don't think that he fully can.
That's the point I'm
making. Yeah, exactly. So, I just think this is the time of the year where the transfer portal starts to kind of, you know, there's a lot of percolating around there, and a lot of people are putting their names in there. We've seen, if I remember right, there was a a fairly decent quarterback going into the portal recently. I'm blanking on it, but you're starting to see that teams are going to be interested. You know, teams are going to be interested in Cam, and obviously Utah's wanting to find out. When the Crimson Collective announced that they were you know, giving these guys trucks, leasing these guys trucks. I'm sorry, all of you that are offended by that. They talked about they wanted $5 million by the beginning of December, you know, and I don't know the exact number. I know they're close. Maybe they've hit that. I need to kind of dig into that again, but they're going to push hard, right? Like, they're going to push for Cam. And if it's not Cam, they're going to push for another high-end caliber quarterback and trying to move forward with this. So we're getting to that point where these answers are going to be probably a little bit, or at least we're going to find out some of these answers. Nate's will probably be a little bit later, you know, whether he decides to stay and stay in that system, or if he wants to leave and try to pursue a quarterback somewhere else. But it'll be interesting. I'm curious to see how this all goes. But anything else from Saturday's game that you want to touch on before we get to basketball?
No, that was a pretty thorough effort by Utah. And, you know, they're usually very good off a loss. I think I lobbed this stat out there after the game. I think now, going back to the 2018 season, I think they're 9-2 in the regular season after a loss. So, you know, credit there to Kyle Whittingham and the staff. You know, after a loss, they have done a really good job of getting these guys to, you know, circle the wagon, so to speak, and get them back up and having a very short memory, right? Look, you have a game Saturday. You can, like, be mad about it for a little while on Sunday as you prepare for the next opponent. And then when you walk into the facility for the normal team meeting / walkthrough, like, it's in the rear view and you're looking forward. So, you know, credit to everybody over there after what was a pretty demoralizing loss to Oregon to get it back up and to, you know, put forth an effort like they did.
Yeah, they found a way each time. It shows their resiliency and being able to work hard. So let's transition to basketball a little bit in the last few minutes that we have. Monday was the season opener for men's and women's basketball. They had a doubleheader. I don't know why they do it this way. A 4 o'clock game for women on a Monday night is not conducive to fans coming. And with that said, there was a fair amount of fans there, like far more than last year it would have been at 4 o'clock. So I think that obviously shows what Lynn's built at this program. But it's still a tough time, right? 4 o'clock, you're getting older fans, which is not a bad thing, but that's kind of your target audience at that point, because most people are working or their kids are at school or whatever that may be. So,
right.
But they get a season opening win of 104-45 against Mississippi State. Mississippi Valley State, excuse me. It started out slow. It was notched up at the end of the first quarter before Utah really kind of took over. But Alyssa Peely continues to be her dominant self. Had 26 points in the first half before leaving the game. After the game, we found out that she actually had to go to the ER because of a scratched eye. I don't think that's going to be a long-term thing. It might hold her out for Thursday's game. I would be surprised, and depending on the severity, but obviously she's been able to be dominant and do whatever she needs to. And against lesser opponents, you know, there's no answer for her. Utah also had two other players leave the game early. Jenna Johnson with a split lip. She had to get some stitches. And Kennedy McQueen has what Lynn was calling at the time a bone bruise. We'll get to talk to them tomorrow in their availability and find out more officially. Early impressions, I know you probably didn't get to watch a lot of it, but just seeing on the score, what do you see from this women's basketball team?
I don't know that you can glean too much from one, you know, opening game that's essentially setting your baseline for what you are and, you know, what you need to be and what you weren't. And so that, you know, as an opening effort, of course, you know, you're very pleased. One, that Peely, you know, looked dominant in the first half. Look, if you're scoring 26 points and only attempting 7 field goals, really, really strong, really, really strong night. So you are, you know, you're getting that from Peely. And, you know, you're getting some of the young kids to, you know, to play, right? There's a couple of transfer additions, you know, there's a freshman or two on there. So that's a night where you can get, you know, everybody's in the game, because for 6 weeks you've been, you know, mostly beating up on each other in practice. So good. It was a tightly contested game early, you know, before Utah kind of woke up, and, you know, the final score was what I think we expected the final score to be. But again, one game, you try not to glean too much from one game, especially on the women's side, where you're going to see a lot of like lopsided scores early in the season. And, you know, the big takeaway from there is, yeah, like you walked out kind of injured, right? Peely with the scratched eye goes to the emergency room. Correct me if I'm wrong. Jenna Johnson finished that game, right? She got stitched up and came back.
She got. Now I'm trying to remember. It was in that in-between stage where I was at football. So yeah, I'm trying to remember all of that, but yeah.
But the point is Jenna Johnson is not like super hurt. No. She's going to be fine. If Kennedy McQueen's thing ends up being just a bone bruise, that shouldn't be a big deal. But Peely, you know, scratched eye. We don't know what the situation is yet. As you said, we'll see Lynn and the players tomorrow, Wednesday. But remember, like, things are going to get, you know, serious here in a hurry, right? You play South Carolina State Thursday night at the Huntsman Center, and then you're stepping up in class and you're playing at Baylor on Tuesday. You would like to be at full strength for Baylor in Waco. So knowing Lynn for a while now, it strikes me as a situation where you, even if Peely's ready, I don't think you take any chances, and you probably sit her Thursday against South Carolina State because you don't need her, quite frankly, and there's bigger fish to fry. But again, opening effort, you don't want to take too much away, but you can kind of see where things are going and everybody who returns and the continuity. So in terms of openers on the women's side, that one ultimately went about as we might expect for Utah.
And knowing how much of a competitor Peely is, if she's, you know, even close to going, she'll probably play.
She'll fight for it.
That's just who she is. And it could be against the worst team in the country, and she still wants to at least play some of it. So I think one only other takeaway that I have there is you know, Lynn is experimenting with her roster. And with that, she has her starting five. There's no doubt about that. There's question on, you know, what you do at point guard, and maybe Maddie Wilkie comes in and takes that spot from her eventually. But this is a unit that is very, you know, they work well together, that they've done a lot together and they're good. But what she did is she essentially subbed off in like a full lineup sub. It wasn't quite that dramatic. It wasn't all five off and everything, but she very quickly and gradually put in her second unit and just let them play together. And I think that was a good indication of where she's trying to go. After the game, she said she's going to continue to try to do that as much as possible because she wants to have a lot of good depth going into March. So, you know, they're very much so playing the long-term game in the short term. They want to be able to develop as much as they can. They want to be able to have as much as they can at the time when they need it the most. So you're going to see a lot of new faces. You know, one of the new faces, Reese Ross, she's a freshman. She's going to come along. I think she's going to be kind of the heir apparent to Alyssa Peely if you know, things continue to go. So there's a lot of optimism about this team and kind of where this is going. So, you know, it's fun to watch, enjoy Utah beat down a lot of these lower level teams right now until these harder games come. But moving to the men's, it was a bit of a grind initially. I mean, there was, you know, Eastern Washington is a tough team. They won the regular season in the Big Sky last year. You know, it was Washington State in the first round of the NIT last year. This is a good team. They return mostly all of their players. They like to shoot. Utah held them to 20 points in the first half, which is something that Craig Smith was incredibly pleased with. But they end up coming out on top 101-66. It's the first time that Utah has, you know, crossed the century mark since 2019 against BYU in an overtime game.
The Ryland Jones game.
This is, you know, that's a big mark, right? Like, it's a season opening game. The fact that you can get 100 points, and it's not like this is a team that's ranked 300 in KenPom. They were in the about 130, 150 range.
Yeah.
A decent team. The fact that Utah could do that, it shows maybe just a little bit of what the potential of this men's team can be.
Yeah, I was not at the Huntsman Center last night, but I did have one eye on this Utah game as I was getting some stuff done. And look, again, one game, you don't want to glean too much, but like immediate, like knee-jerk stuff. Cole Badgema, you know, mostly as advertised, is like a knockdown guy from multiple spots. Kaba Kata looks like he's taken like real tangible steps forward. Gabe Mattson had a bit of a tough start, but ultimately shot 8 of 12 and scored 20. What else? You know, Brandon Carlson, you know, not a typically huge, you know, BC night, but again, one game. No matter what you're doing on offense, Craig Smith teams will play defense. And for a lot of last season, they were, you know, top 12, top 14, 15 nationally in adjusted defense. So that team is going to, that team is going to play defense. You know, the big question all of last year was, well, where's the offense coming from? And they never really found it last year. So you're, you know, you're watching last night. It's like, all right, you know, there's more depth here and there's more options. And Bajima, you know, brings a different sort of element that Utah was missing for most of last season, especially, you know, further down the stretch when Gabe Mattson was out, you know, with his injury. I think that, if memory serves, what was he out? Four, six games last year through January and February.
I think it was more than that, wasn't it?
Might have been more than that. Yeah. So, you know, you're in a, you're in, I think Craig Smith left that game last night feeling good about, like, okay, that's the baseline that we've now established to improve. This is what we did well. What we didn't do well, I thought the, you know, personally watching at home, I thought the second half defense kind of, you know, waned a bit.
It did.
You know, too many easy shots for Eastern Washington. You know, so we'll see. You know, the one glaring thing is, like, depth at point guard is not quite there yet, right? Riley Wooster starts the game, you know, played the majority of the game as they await a waiver decision from the NCAA on Davon Smith. Davon Smith is a two-time transfer. What's that?
It's not going to happen. Let's be real.
It's not trending in the right direction. And I'm basing that on just looking at the football side of things and also on the basketball side of things as waiver decisions start to come out. I can remember one or two, like, basketball decisions so far that, like, went the player's way. We'll see what happens. But the point guard depth last night was lacking. You know, if Riley Wooster was not on the floor, what are you doing about a ball handler? Will Exact did not play last night due to injury. That injury is not expected to be long term. So this is your baseline. You play UC Riverside on Friday night at the Huntsman Center. That's another kind of low major team that generally, like, lurks as a potential giant killer at this time of year. You know, they usually play pretty well. And then things get, you know, kicked up again, right? You're going to the Charleston Classic. You open that MTE with Wake Forest. That field includes Houston and St. John's potentially down the road. So, you know, it's early, but we're going to find out something, like, fairly immediately, really, about both the men's and women's programs. Again, with the women playing at Baylor next week and the men playing in an MTE that is pretty hefty, you know, with power five, power six opponents.
Yeah, even though it's early, I think you can still be happy about the depth that Utah's got. I think the fact that Brandon Carlson didn't have his offensive showing that you're used to seeing is a good thing, and that Utah was able to do what they did. You know, yeah. Craig glowingly talked about Brandon Carlson and what he did outside of the stat sheet, right? And it was true, right? Like, Brandon on the floor with Lawson Lovering in their two big situation that Craig has always wanted to run, it started to feel effective, right? They can spread the floor a little bit more. They can ease the congestion in the post. That was part of the problem last year, is Brandon was kind of your number one option if it wasn't Gabe. And there was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of consolidation in that post where you could just, you know, keep him in check. And there was an issue of kicking it out because there was nobody to shoot it outside of Gabe. And so this is, you know, the progression that Utah is at. I think they're starting to get there. You have two sharpshooters that can be out there and can be dangerous. You know, if Raleigh is having a game like he played yesterday, you've got a third guy that can be a really dynamic player, you know, and I know a lot of people like have a lot of distaste for Raleigh. You know, he's kind of the Bryson Barnes of this team, right? He just goes in there and he works hard. He's never going to be your top guy, but he has shown flashes of brilliance where he is just all over the floor. He's flirting with triple doubles on a consistent basis. I don't know why people hate him, and I guess I get it, but, like, he's giving everything he's got, and he's going to make mistakes, and that's the nature of the point guard position, but he is doing everything for this team. So this is a team that I think has a lot of depth. They've got a lot of versatility. Is it well-rounded yet? Not quite. But the fact that you're getting, you know, Kaba Keita looking a little less raw, he's looking a little bit more complete. Ben Carlson completely took a step forward. I think he looks like a completely improved player. He's got confidence. He can stretch the floor now. He can get down in the mix and kind of be down in there as well. But you're seeing development, right? And if they could get a Davon Smith in there, I really think this Utah team could be something special if he was there. It's just not going to happen.
I'm sorry, guys. DeLon Wright is not walking through that door. Okay. He's out of eligibility. So
this is where we are. Yeah.
The Davon Wright thing, I'm wanting Smith. To write a little bit more on that topic. I'm kind of in a holding pattern from athletic department officials until the NCAA waiver decision comes down. I'm not complaining. I'm just telling you, what it is. I think there's a lot to unpack with that Davon Wright situation. Craig knew what he was getting into by recruiting Davon Wright. He knew that, he's a two-time transfer. He knew that the NCAA is cracking down a bit on two-time transfer waivers. That was part of the recruiting process, talking to him about if it doesn't happen for him, with the waiver, like this is what we're going to do. So there's a lot to unpack there, but I agree with you. If Davon Wright can get eligible and into the lineup and start making an impact, I think it certainly brings a badly needed element to the backcourt that Craig Smith teams have been missing the first 2 years here. And I'll also say, I think we've said this before, this is a very big year, a very important year for Craig Smith. Year three of his 6-year deal, the entire roster, the roster's turned over now. Okay. In the age of the portal and, NIL and everything, you see teams turning over the roster in one fell swoop in one offseason. That hasn't been the case here at Utah for, a number of reasons, but they've now turned it over. This is Craig Smith's roster. He has full control of the schedule. This is his program and his team and his schedule. This is a very important year for Craig Smith in terms of taking the program forward and doing something tangible, especially knowing that you're going into the Big 12 next year. Okay, they've had enough trouble breaking through in the Pac-12. You're going to the Big 12 now, which is, the last 1-2 years objectively might be the best conference in the country. So this is a very important season to take a step forward, one, and lay some groundwork, two, for the move to the Big 12.
Yeah, year three is definitely a pivotal year for Smith. And, I think he's making inroads, and I think he's getting there. But, it's not going to get any easier, as you mentioned. And tomorrow, which is Wednesday, is actually the early signing period for basketball for National Signing Day, as well as all other sports outside of football. And so we're going to get a little bit more clarification, or at least officiality, on who will commit. There's two guys that that Utah men's basketball should be getting here soon. So it'll be, we'll see how this progresses, but this is kind of where they need to be. So we've gone a little long. We appreciate you staying with us, though. But we're going to try to get as much as we can with football and basketball and anything else that happens on the Utah beat. But we appreciate everybody listening and sticking with us, even if we go a little bit over an hour. And, we'll see you later this week as we preview the Washington game and kind of get into that as Utah's football season slowly comes to an end. But with that, we'll sign off. Have a good one.
Later, guys.